You're listening to the Board Game Snobs podcast, a ridiculous podcast with ridiculous hosts that discuss ridiculous things. And any mention of board games is purely coincidental. And so, without further ado, and with a heavy dollop of shame and embarrassment on my part, I give you the Board Game Snobs.
And welcome to the 300th episode of the Board Game Snobs. Actually, 300.5, because we had to restart this podcast because Dan Hughes is a nasty man and says things that we have to delete so much of. And Mike's here with us too. Mike Delisio, the unpublished board game designer, and his fellow cohort, a actually respected published designer. It's nice to have you both here for our very special episode. Even though I've already thanked you once, I will thank you once again.
I'm here as well, Jerry just keeps being redundant and stating obvious things that don't need to be stated.
Why? Why am I saying that's stated? Because the audience doesn't know who's here.
All right.
They don't. You just imagine. See, this is what I have to put up with. Unprofessionalism.
And welcome, Michael and Daniel.
Michael and Daniel.
Thank you. You know, it's interesting in that intro that we did before that is not going to be aired. Jerry threw it right to you, Gabby, at the very beginning and let you introduce us. It's interesting on this second go round that he just grabbed the controls out of your hand and made you largely ineffectual.
Well, it's like it took me a second to remember who y'all were. But and once the memory has been jogged, here we are. And I think I asked a very compelling question about gatekeeping and if Dan would ever help somebody else publish a game. And he talked about helping you, Mike, mixtape or something.
I'm doing this voluntary stuff with the senior citizen, helping them kind of bring in board game designs to senior citizens and you know, mentoring in many ways, many people would say. I mean, they're largely incompetent. The ideas they come up with are things like, hey, can't we make another version of Monopoly and stuff like that. That's a direct impression, which is very accurate. But nevertheless, you know, I'm shaping him, I'm guiding him, I'm pointing him in the right
direction. Dan, I understand that the British are very fond of self-deprecating humor, but really, you should not speak of yourself this way. You are somebody that still has a lot left to give. You're still as vital as anyone can expect by looking at you, right? So I think you're doing just fine, Dan. Don't let the throngs of people on Reddit get you down by talking about how you are a former shell of what you used to be and a shriveled husk.
That's where you're wrong, Mike, because I googled myself on Reddit just last night and it's like a barren wasteland of results in there. There is not a single person discussing me, and the only time they ever discuss me is in conjunction with you. And to be honest, and this is about time we got this idea, and this is exactly the right form.
So
this podcast,
yes,
because I'm the senior partner in this podcast. Yeah. And Mike Delisio gets a job at the Dice Tower. Now everyone thinks he's wonderful. Oh, well, everyone thought I was wonderful once, and you'll go down, Mike. You'll go down. Don't be careful of the people that you dismiss on the way up, because you're going to meet them back on the way back down. And I tell you this, Mike, I tell you this, I will spit on your grave.
See how vital, guys? See how vital he is? All recognize the vitality and the vigor.
I absolutely love
that we have turned your 300th episode into a sporadically bored podcast. Get ready for the downloads, gentlemen. Well, you may want to pay for a bigger server.
Is this your first fight? That's my question.
What's that?
Is this your first fight?
Oh, today? No, not even today. Okay. No. Yeah. So happy to be here. Look, we've been ready for what, Dan, an hour and a half, I would say.
Can y'all
and,
let things
finally,
go?
Have you ever made a mistake?
Hey, I'm the star. It took me a long time to show up. I showed up fashionably late.
So we're here to celebrate us in our 300th episode. We're here to celebrate us. So please go ahead and praise us for 300 episodes of quality content.
Now, I'm going to come here with some, you know what the kids say today when they want you to prove something? They say, show me the receipt.
Right.
Okay. I have receipts, gentlemen. And because we started our podcast relatively similar. You've been doing it a bit longer than us, right?
September 2017.
And when did we start, Dan?
September 2017.
Exactly. So, you're on...
No, that's not true at all. I've got no idea.
Okay. So you're on episode 300, right? And Dan and I are on episode 104, 103, I think. We're on our 103rd episode, although there is a strange numbering snafu there where somehow there's no episode 100. Anyway, some might say for two podcasts that have been around a similar length of time, one has 300 episodes, gentlemen, take a bow, 300 episodes, very impressive. And another one has barely over 100. That one clearly is the more dedicated, the more stronger work ethic, take things more seriously. I think that that's a reasonable inference, is it not, Gary and Jerry and Gobby and Gabby? What do you think?
I do, too. I think that's you make a fine point because we have not published a game. And Mr. Hughes, of course, has the privilege of being the board game designer to publish a board game based solely on child labor. And
and a book, I published, and
you did the voiceovers as well. And I have already backed it's a mixtape or something of that nature on Kickstarter already.
That's interesting. So it's coming out on Kickstarter. You know, I just want to point out, Jerry, that question was as close to rhetorical as you can get. I expected you to say yes, and let me continue with my receipt.
Here we go.
I was trying 103 episodes versus 300 episodes. So I actually today spent more time, did more work and more preparation than I've ever done for any of our own podcasts because I wanted to get some receipts. So here's the thing. I figured out the length of all of our 103 episodes. Okay.
Oh,
and here are the stats, gentlemen. Here are the stats. Over those 103 episodes, we have recorded 11,506 minutes of podcast. That works out to 191.76 hours of podcast. Each of our podcasts average 1 hour and 52 minutes. Therefore, you could listen to the Sporadically Bored podcast 24 hours a day, 8 days straight.
Which I've done.
And you tell me, you come on here with your 300th episode and try to tell us that you got something over on us, right? Look, I understand what you're doing here. You thought, oh, you know, we'll have them on and we'll make them feel special by being part of our 300th episode. No, this was a flex. This was a massive flex. And I came with the receipts.
Did you do our stats by any chance?
What?
Did you add up our minutes by any chance?
I have no way of finding it. I don't even know where you guys are hosted. is it public? Public license? I'm not sure they're online. I think they're on some kind of like a, what are those subnets they used to be called?
I think we're hosted on rotten.com.
On the dark web.
Well, I don't know where.
Gobby, exactly do you have your stats, Gobby?
We're on Spotify, aren't we?
Oh, good God.
Podbean? We're on something. I don't know. I don't mess with the publishing. I'm not even sure if this podcast gets published.
I didn't know. I was going to be looking up.
You've unsettled them, Mike. They're in disarray.
Yes, they're befuddled.
They're scrambling around for their notes to try and add it all up.
This is like comparing.
I can see the beads of sweat.
This is like comparing apples and oranges. For instance, y'all's show is more of a disjointed mosh pod of just your mosh daily pods. Life. And whereas ours tends to follow a very clearly defined
boring,
linear, but also ups and downs, roller coaster of an experience.
Vanilla.
Sure. It's not vanilla. I think it's very profound in a lot of ways. We deal with death and hatred and board games and everything else in between. We've had epiphanies.
That's true. I'd say you're more of a rocky road. More of a rocky road.
And so that's how it is. Whereas y'all are just kind of a more of a periodical, like with certain television series that you watch, there are soap operas. We're more of a soap opera. Y'all are more of a show that gets canceled every once in a while. There's long lulls in between seasons. It's very much a British sitcom. Mm. It's like, oh, it's the greatest show of all time, and there's four episodes. You know, y'all the Fawlty Towers of podcasts. You know, it's everybody.
And each one of those episodes of Fawlty Towers is considered a work of genius. Is correct, that correct?
Yeah. All nine episodes. Isn't it nine episodes?
There's Days of Our Lives over there.
Right. Well, it's a telenovela over there.
Well, hey, the fact
that... Dos cameos y el mío.
The fact that we're still
here... What are Jerry and Gabby going to be falling out over this week?
Hey, I've gotten better. I've aired out all of my grievances.
Now for the airing of grievances.
Yes.
I got a lot of problems with you people.
Yeah. Yeah. Who are we hating on now?
Well, but look, you've got me all to flutter, and I don't even know how to access Podbean all of a sudden.
Why did you turn on these cameras so I could see their faces? And now you're switching over and looking at Podbean stuff. Listen, nobody cares, Gabby. Nobody cares. It's obvious.
Whatever you do, whatever you're doing, Gabby, just make sure you switch off your mic.
This mic came on and just like come with vicious attacks.
Listen.
And Gabby, I'm like, well, this is going to be a nice episode with our friends.
Gabby, let the haters hate. Turn the camera back on. Yeah, there you go. I got two talking heads. This was like Piers Morgan.
I didn't realize
live.
It turned you off. My bad.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
How dare you?
Nothing
turned on me.
What? It's a British guy and two talking heads.
Absolutely furious.
Unleashed, would you say?
We had to wait for an hour until Jerry turned up. And then we had to restart because Gabby doesn't know how to use a microphone.
I will apologize.
300 episodes, no less.
I showed up an hour late, come walking in, drinking a gin and tonic, and demanded to be on camera. So, yes, it got exciting. Yeah, it's 1 o'clock.
The sacrifices I make.
Yes, there you go. I asked Gabby.
The lovely Chardet actually came to say hello to us before we started recording, and she was forcibly removed from the studio. She was shouted at. I felt so sorry for her.
It's absolutely shocking. The behavior from this podcast is absolutely shocking.
How we've not been
aren't you
canceled.
Glad you had us on?
How we, yeah. How
it's everything done. I wanted and more.
I actually thought we were having Richard Simpson on. I came in with facts about Scotland. Or Ireland, wherever he's from.
Let him do his Sean Connery impression. That's what he's going to do for an hour long. An hour long Sean Connery impression. That's what you're going to get with Richard.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Ask him to sing I'm Gonna Be 500 Miles.
He's finally
when I have her, well, I know I'm going to be the man who's ever in with you.
I had a student nurse once, and I said, you look just like one of the Proclaimers. And then I realized... I should have said you look like both of the Proclaimers.
They're
identical twins. So that was right. an error.
He never worked with you again.
She never came back, Mike. She never came back.
Oh, that's terrible.
Well,
oh, yeah, I asked Gabby, do you have something planned for this? Do you have...
No, I just really just wanted to catch up with our longtime pod friends here. Say hello, make sure everybody's doing okay. So this is episode 300. It really does not mean anything. It doesn't mean, it's just a stupid number.
No,
it doesn't take
means
any,
a lot.
It doesn't take any skill.
Yes,
or,
it does.
I mean, you know, we could have zero listeners and have 300 episodes of complete silence.
But we have listeners.
You've proven that over these years, Gabby, and congratulations
but we do have listeners, and we do appreciate each and every one of them and the people we've come to know along the way.
This self-deprecation stuff, I do not understand.
Yeah.
Maybe you are.
I don't know. What
it's a bit easier to appreciate 10 people. I will give you that, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so here is... we're going to do this.
Oh, he's got a notebook out now. No,
Here we go. It's the notebook all over again.
And he's got his glasses on.
Things are getting real serious.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, so this is a game.
Go ahead. I feel terrible for what we're doing.
No, you're fine. You're absolutely fine. Everything's fine. this is the antonym game in which I'm going to say some antonyms to actual game titles.
Mm. Antonyms? What does antonym mean?
The opposite of.
She Why was did you on, say opposite? She was on Andy Griffith.
I'm going to come on here and tell me what I should call my own game.
Antium. That's a Russian name. Artium. I'm sorry.
I had an aunt whose name was Anim, believe it or not. It was really, really odd.
It was
Did she have any secrets?
Grandma,
Okay. So, for instance, I'll give you an example so you get the idea. It's very, very obvious. If I was to say port poorness.
Wait, that's filthy. What now?
Port poorness.
Port poorness.
What the earth is the opposite of
poorness? Are you meaning backwards? Because these are certainly not English words.
Let me say poorness. Port poorness.
Poorness? Like as in
poorness.
Like poor people.
Poorness.
Port Royal is what you're getting at. But yeah. port and port are not.
No, that's
because that's not a synonym.
Poverty. Okay, it's hard.
Peasants.
Oh my god! What is an ant? What's the opposite of a port? See, that's where this game gets difficult.
The opposite of a port is
starboard. You idiot!
A harbor.
It's not that kind of port, though, Dan. It means an actual.
It's the opposite word, isn't it?
Sharknay.
Okay, so the name of the game was actually Puerto Rico, because Puerto Rico means rich port. So
that was really good.
Okay, all right. So really now good. This
Port Royal was a better answer, but okay.
Yeah, I did too. I thought that as
this,
well.
This quiz is possibly the worst.
I like the game that doesn't deal with slavery.
So what I'm going to need y'all to do is, if you know the answer, raise your hands as fast as you can.
Well, we're not going to know the answer, are we? Because you're going to give stupid questions. But go on, then. You just read your questions out, and we'll sit here in silence.
Dan, these are in a notebook. Let the man do his game.
Sorry. I can't and see I'll, him, can I?
I'll give y'all like a 1 second handicap because Jerry is live.
Move really slow.
There you go.
I'll give you all a 1 second handicap because Jerry. All right, here we go.
Okay, so I'm going to start off with some old, classic, like, mass market games.
Okay.
Mattel, gotcha. Hasbro type stuff. Okay? Milton Bradley type stuff.
Got it. Yes.
Disconnect Zero.
Connect Four.
I said raise your hand.
You did not put your hand up.
What is wrong with you? My hand was up first.
I'm sorry.
The rules of the game were clearly
fine. I'm sorry. I was sitting on my hands to give you a bit.
Okay. 300 episodes. This is what you come with. 300 episodes.
It was too easy.
Okay.
It's too easy.
Safety.
Risk.
Oh.
Does no one get the hand thing?
He got the
Nobody.
Hand thing. Yeah. Raise that.
Look, you're asking us to use our hands and speak.
I think we should buzz in.
Is this like American Gladiators or something?
You should buzz in.
That raising of the hand is the buzz in.
No, you should make a buzzer noise. Everybody do your best buzzer noise.
Okay, I'll give one to Dan.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, what about air horns?
We'll accept air horns.
Zero isn't the opposite of four, but anyway, go on.
Look,
but in American math, look. It is.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah, that maybe not in math, Dan, but in math, it is.
Maths. There's different types of maths.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are you ready?
There's Math Damon.
Bitter C. Raise your hands if you know it. Bitter C. Mike.
The famous 1952 release, Sweet Ocean.
No, I know it.
Make the noise. Make the noise. Daniel. Buzz in.
Daniel.
It's a shoddy one, but it's Candyland.
Yes.
Oh, bad.
Oh.
I know.
Another children's game. These are all children's games. No wonder Dan is killing us.
I said, you know, the mass market. Blah, blah, blah. Okay.
The next one's going to be ladders and chutes. Okay, go ahead, Gabby.
Unapologetic. Jerry.
Sorry.
Jerry got it.
Sorry.
I thought we were making buzzing noises now. We're putting hands up again now.
And we're staying in this line of games. So just keep that in mind. Peace. Jerry had like a 2 second. Okay, go ahead, Jerry.
Mm-hmm. War?
No.
The card game War? No.
Mass market game.
Peace?
Problems. Oh, no, never mind. I just went with the synonym. Mike?
Strife?
No.
Peace? You said peace?
Dan is Googling.
He's doing something off camera.
How could I Google that? What? Questions.
You could just type in. You could type in
antium.
There's a. You can just type in antonym and then type in the word strife and it'll give you like a list of like 40 antonyms.
Oh, I could do your ChatGPT.
Dare you?
That this wasn't used.
Okay, so the answer to that one was trouble.
Trouble. That was antium.
Strife. No.
You said peace, and you said
English again. English is not our.
I'm wrong with strife.
Gabby, on a scale of 1 to 10, how proud were you of this game when you finished it?
He wrote it down in his handy notebook. Well, when
these are actually all AI
created. There we go. I figured as much.
I'll tell you.
All right.
Okay.
This podcast is going to go down in Gabby's diary tonight.
So now we're moving into more modern gaming, hobby gaming.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. What is the opposite of Catan? Here we go.
Literally, Wanderers of Disarray. Jerry.
Settlers of Catan.
The AI knows.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Wait.
The Wanderers.
What? How is Catan an antonym of disarray?
I don't know. Catan is something for us.
I'm typing questions into a machine that has all the knowledge that humans have put into it across the universe. And that's what it came up with. I think it knows what it's talking about.
Catan came from the inconceivable mind of Klaus Teuber. There is no antonym. Let's go. This game is getting better as we go along.
Servitude. Michael?
Wingspan.
Incorrect, sir. Jerry?
Freedom?
Incorrect, sir.
Okay. I think I see the...
Yeah. You said freedom.
Yeah.
Jerry.
Yeah, that's a servitude.
Servitude.
It's thrilling podcasting.
This is
servitude.
Riveting.
Just let the listeners know that there's at least 5 minutes of silence throughout this podcast.
Okay. I'll bail you out on this one. That was Dominion.
Oh, yeah. That's not.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
All of us are not expressing outrage because we're not entirely sure we're intelligent enough to work out whether that was an actual antonym of that or not.
Was that a good clue or not? I don't know. Okay, I
say it wasn't, but then people might actually be one and I might just not be very bright.
This one I believe is a good one.
Here we go.
Large universe. Michael.
Small world.
There you go.
Hello.
Mike's on the board.
I can get the gimmies.
Okay, and here's another one. Stroll for the Countryside. Michael was quick again.
Race for the Galaxy?
Correct. All right, so it's two apiece. Well, this is the last
one. Dan is talking, but I don't hear him. I can see his mouth moving, but I don't hear him.
I'm just incandescent with rage. That's why. I am putting my hand up before Mike, and according to this is bias against the international community. With the I've got the Atlantic to get over.
You're on Yorkshire regional time, Dan. We can't be beholden to that ancient and archaic time system.
Greenwich time. Yes,
you only have time.
Due to
Greenwich.
Okay, I'm just going to do this last one.
Okay, thank God.
All right, here we go.
Stay at home. It's really not an opposite of. I don't think you're going to get it.
So your question breaks all the rules. Stay at home.
Stay. Think one of the most.
Okay.
One of the most popular games ever.
But this is an ancient game. If you're talking about Go.
No.
All right.
Stay at home.
Let me make it easier for you. Stay to home.
Go to work.
Michael.
Ticket to Ride.
Correct. Huzzah, Mike wins the game.
Oh, my goodness.
terrible.
These are the worst questions.
Okay. All right. So I'm glad you worked on that. I have a game as well.
They tell us we need to worry about our AI overlords.
Yeah,
if that's what they're coming with, I think we're good for another year.
Mine is not based on any AI stuff. This game is basically, are they dead?
This is Daniel's
game. That sounds very familiar, Dan.
That's a very familiar game.
What? Is it? Did y'all do this as well?
We've done this for several episodes.
I don't listen.
And we've even got it on record of you abusing us for doing this.
Well, this is intellectual.
We know that.
I have no idea.
It's a game Daniel calls white spaghetti or something.
White spaghetti?
Brown bread.
Oh. Brown bread.
See what I did there? See what I did? Antonym.
So, Dick Van Dyke, dead or alive?
Alive.
Alive.
Got me.
I was thinking he just died.
You saying dead?
Yes.
No, Dick Van Dyke is alive. 98 years old.
Good grief.
Still tap dancing, baby.
There you go. Mel Brooks.
Alive.
Alive.
Alive as well.
Yes, he is. 97. Let's go deeper here. Let's see if we can't come. Anne Margaret. You know Anne Margaret, the Swedish-born actress?
Dead as a doornail. Been dead a long time.
She was in Jailhouse Rock with Elvis.
Yeah, she was an Elvis.
Goodness sake.
Apparently still.
She's an actress and a singer.
Still alive, apparently.
I don't agree with that.
Is she really? She's still alive?
Yes.
What is she, 170?
She's old.
I said alive.
She was born in 41.
You didn't know who she was, Dan. Your vote doesn't matter. Okay, here we go.
Chubby Checker. The American rock and roll singer.
He's still alive. I've done this one.
Alive,
Yeah, you did.
We did that one in our show.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll move on. So we're getting our information from the same. Let's see.
I get more and more panicked, Mike, because they realize they've got no way of beating our podcast.
What about Buzz Aldrin?
That's correct. Buzz Aldrin is alive.
He is alive.
Gabby?
He was Dancing with the Stars, wasn't he? I think he's alive.
He is alive.
Well, if he was Dancing with the Stars, he may not have made it. Okay. Oh, he's still alive. Good.
All right. So I've got another game. Since I did not know this was copyright protected.
Because I did steal it off another.
Okay.
Someone else.
Well,
there's no original ideas. Okay.
It's all on this. This one is called The Biggest Flop. No.
Oh.
Yes. The Biggest Flop.
Is it?
No.
Okay.
No. I do. Last time we did the highest grossing movies.
It's not rude, is it? It's not about conjugal rights.
Conjugal rights. No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
This is about
biggest flop.
The biggest
flop. Is it about Mike's career at the Dice Tower?
Oh. Shots fired. Well, that's fine. 2002. Which movie flopped worse?
Okay.
Oh, this is a good quiz. Now this is what we
Now we're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
I've got another quiz too after this.
No, you're not quizzing.
You're kidding me.
You're done.
No, I do. That's why I had you bring the paper.
Calm down now. You're done.
You are off the podcast.
I'm not done.
The Eddie Murphy movie,
uh-huh.
The Adventures of Pluto Nash, or
uh-huh.
Heart's War, starring two of my favorites, Bruce Willis, who's given up long ago, and my man Colin Farrell.
Question.
Heart's War was a great movie, by the way.
Question.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking production budget versus loss or just least made completely overall?
We're talking about total net loss. And listen, I know you're going to argue this later. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Pluto Nash or Heart's War?
I'm going to say Pluto Nash because it was very high budget.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying, though.
I went total to net Colin loss. First apartment on a tour
total
in Dublin.
Net.
Just like to point that out.
You're saying
I'm saying the other one, Heart's War, because I don't know.
That is 100% Adventures of Pluto Nash.
Correct. Pluto Nash had a budget of $100 million with a total net loss of $96 million, whereas Hearts War had a similar budget of $95 million, but only a net loss of $62 million. Not a bad movie, by the way, Hearts War. I don't know why it was kind of panned. It's been a hard time, a really hard time for Colin Farrell. He's had a rough.
He got the Batman.
And Bruce Willis as well.
He's not Bruce Batman. Well. He's Penguin.
I mean, he was in the Batman.
Well, but that's not starring in it. Let's see.
He's coming out with his own TV show on HBO Max based on the Penguin. He's back.
All right.
Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's
a good actor, you know. Have you seen him in The Gentleman? He was really good in The Gentleman.
Yeah, he was.
He's really good in The Banshees of Inisherin and in Bruges. And yeah, he's a good actor.
He's really good in Sugar, too.
He's a great character actor who's cursed with too good looks, in my opinion.
As am I.
Although,
which one of these films flopped worst? The 2003 film Jiggly. It's the one with
Bennifer.
Ben Affleck.
Yeah. Or Gods and Generals, the one with what's his face in it? The Dumb and Dumber. No, it's Dumb and Dumber. What's his name? It's the Battle of Fredericksburg. It was the one that had
Daniels.
Jeff Daniels played Chamberlain in it.
Oh, gosh.
Yes. And it had Stephen Lang, because he gives that great speech in it. Like, just Google Gods and Generals and Stephen Lang and listen to his speech.
I think you're only picking movies that only you like. Yeah, I'm going to go with Gigli, because that probably also had a very high budget, being Bennifer.
I am also going with Gigli.
Gigli is a modern movie. I don't think that, other than paying Ben and Jennifer, it was
filmed it in Europe too, if I remember.
Was
it?
I mean, I know that was like
a gold film.
Renowned. Correct. Yeah. I mean, I want to go with Gigli, but based on, I don't know, a sense trickery, Gods and Generals.
It is pronounced Gigli, rhyming with really. I did not know that. Mm-hmm. Gigli had a budget of somewhere between $50 to $75 million. With a total net loss of $70 million, adjusted for inflation, it would put it over $100 million. Whereas Gods and Generals only had a budget of $56 million, with only a total net loss of $47 million. So Gigli was a bigger flop than Gods and Generals. Please Google Stephen Lang; he's the bad guy on Avatar. His speech in Gods and Generals, great, great speech. Okay,
which side was he for?
We're not talking about that.
Come on, boys.
All right. What flopped worse? The 2005 film, directed by, I'm not going to say who directed by, but it does have your man in it, playing Dirk Pitt, Sahara. Starring Matthew McConaughey. And what was the
Penelope Cruz.
Penelope Cruz. This was after she broke up with Tom. Mm-hmm. She was never quite the same after that. I'm going to point that out. Or the 2005 film, Son of the Mask. That's right.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Who
Jamie
played
Kennedy
the mask in
that one? Is Jamie Kennedy playing.
Oh, my gosh. That's
so which
right.
Which film flopped worse? You got to take into account the budget. And they'll
work. Yeah,
I'm going Sahara.
At that time, you know, I quite like Clive Cussler. I've tried to read his books recently, and they're absolutely shocking. But I enjoyed it.
You like
I'm
it?
I'm saying Sahara.
Sahara?
I'm going to go with Sahara, too. It had to have...
Yeah, Sahara.
Indeed, you're all correct. It had a budget of $130 to $160 million, losing close to $80 million. Inflation adjusted over $109 million, whereas The Son of Mask also had a very high budget of $80 to $100 million, but only had a total loss of $40 million. Yes, more people enjoyed The Son of the Mask.
That's sad.
And it's interesting because only $20 of that budget went to the script. So another little known fact.
All right. The 2007 film, which bombed worse, Evan Almighty, starring your man, Stephen Carell.
Yeah.
Everyone's our man for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he was the guy who played the guy on The Office. That's your man, the guy from The Office.
You mean Ricky Gervais?
Yeah.
Ricky Gervais is
there. Do y'all not
man.
Want him? We'll take him.
You can keep Ricky Gervais.
You don't like Ricky. So you don't like Piers. You don't like Ricky. Man, who do you like?
So it's almost like I don't like racist, people. Sexist, horrific.
You just don't like people. Name an English person you like.
What queen is I like?
The queen is
English
dead.
Person.
English person, mm-hmm. not Evan.
That comedian, Alabaster guy. Mm. What was that comedian you liked? James Acaster. Yeah, Alabaster. Yeah, they're all Andrew white. Acaster. That's one you like. There you go. Okay.
Or, James Acaster's got a lot to say about Ricky Gervais.
Oh.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I don't like him at all.
Who doesn't?
There you go. James Acaster.
Oh.
Got a whole routine about Ricky Gervais.
Well, I have to look it up. Mm-hmm. Or The Invasion, starring your man, Daniel Craig, who will take him. And Nicole Kidman. Yeah, I don't remember The Invasion.
I do not remember The Invasion.
It's not a bad film. Anything with
Nicole Kidman's Ian O'Toole's label.
So, are there any films that are in the running for the biggest flop that you have not seen, Jerry?
I listen. If a movie flops,
your taste in movies is flawless.
No. If there is a flop, if somebody tells me a movie is bad, I go and watch it. That's just how it is. If you say this show is awful, I have to watch it.
That's how I first came to Board Game Snobs, actually. to your podcast.
Well, it works. Because sometimes you find that one jewel. Isn't there a movie that everybody hates that you yourself love? I absolutely adore the Super Mario Brothers, the original one. With Hopper in it. That was so insane.
Mm. Hudson Hawk is mine. I love
Hudson Hawk. That's a great movie.
Yes. Yeah. And like shows that flop and people that they think they're terrible. No. Anyways.
So I like Heaven's Gate, which was probably the biggest flop in Hollywood history.
Heaven's Gate.
The Michael Cimino movie, really ridiculously high budget.
It went over budget, and then it's a Western, and as Western were going out of style.
Yeah. I really liked that.
Waterworld's good, too.
Waterworld's amazing.
Waterworld is a good film.
It's good.
They need to remake it. So either.
Even though Kevin Costner is perhaps the worst actor in the history of Hollywood.
Well, no. He does his thing. His thing is just very limited. He's got that one stick.
And they continue to try to put him in movies like Robin Hood.
They should not. That's a great film because it's like he subverted expectations.
He subverted a lot of things. He subverted accents for sure.
You mean the expectation he could do an English accent?
Correct. He tried.
He was the originator of the American accent.
He did.
Maybe they're like, this is where American accents come from. Robin Hood procreated.
He did the Sean Connery thing of just, I'm keeping my accent no matter what I'm doing. And people,
Sean Connery could act, though. There is that.
Sean Connery was a great actor. Yes.
Well. Yeah. He had more range than now this isn't saying much, but he had more range than what's his name?
Robin Hood.
He was good in Indiana Jones, and that was it. Cousin Cody.
He was good in The Rock and The Hunt Red October, and he's been good in movies.
I'd never seen the end of Hunt for Red October because there was a bomb threat and I had to abandon the cinema. And
that's the end of the movie, too, actually. So you did see it. Yeah.
They called in a bomb for it.
Elaborate PR stunt.
Right. Ask Richard when he comes on to do Sean Connery at the end of Hunt for Red October, where they have the big bomb threat.
Yeah. Because he'll do it anyway. So you might as well just ask him to do it. And then it feels like you got some control.
Well. Bomb. That's a great name for a podcast.
Okay, so did we get an answer for? Let's make this the final one.
Evan Almighty or The Invasion?
It was Invasion and Evan Almighty, right?
Evan Almighty was a massive flop.
It was.
It took forever to build that arc.
I don't even remember The Invasion. I'm going to go with The Invasion because I don't even remember that movie with two big actors.
Was Evan Almighty a sequel to?
Yes, it was. It was to Bruce Almighty,
wasn't it? Yeah.
Evan or The Invasion.
I really don't care, but I'm going to say Invasion. There you go.
Gobby?
Evan.
Evan had a budget of, wait for it, $175 million. And it had a net loss of almost $90 million. It almost, good Lord. So it's the Invasion, however, just had a budget of $80 million. And it only had a total net loss of $71 million. I am the only person, I guess, that saw the Invasion. But yeah,
all right. No, I never saw it.
I'm not sure it's a film.
I'm not sure.
I love Daniel Craig.
We're gonna have to let Michael go here soon. So, Michael, I'm glad you came here for this.
As the person here that has a life of significance and importance, I have a very tightly wound schedule. All of my appearances are booked months in advance. And so I've got a whole team of handlers outside of this door that are already texting me on my many phones.
Those are called orderlies. You have orderlies.
I have to go to my next appointment. So I look, I'm in charge, so I can go a couple of minutes beyond them. But, you know, yeah, I unfortunately do need to head out soon. And I know Richard is literally chomping at the bit. Richard has many flavored bits at home that he enjoys chomping on to get on board here. So,
well, is there anything you would like to say, promote, Enoch's Hammer, anything? What y'all got going on?
No promotion from me. I'll let Dan be the gauche individual. I would like to, after 40 minutes of giving you unrelenting grief, I would like to be serious for a moment and say that congratulations on this. It is an achievement, Gabby. It's very much an achievement. I know that numbers can be arbitrary, but it is very much a milestone, in my opinion. You guys are doing your thing, and you're doing it well, and you have carved a very unique niche in podcasting. I think that you are maybe slightly more of a board game podcast than we are, but I think in many ways we are kindred spirits. So congratulations. You are both lovely individuals, and I appreciate you asking me to be a part of it.
Right. Tell Tom hi for us. Tell him we'll come visit one of these days.
Mm-hmm. Michael, you're one of my favorite people. When I see you, I just want one of these days when I see you, let it be known, I am going to hug you.
I would like you to lift me from the floor so that my legs can be bent at the knee and you can
twirl you around in a circle.
I have pictured that moment many times. It's gonna happen. It lives up to my expectations.
It will happen.
I've pictured it too, but only because I'm quite enjoying the image of Gabby then having a heart attack and dropping dead. So
you want me to die?
So that, well, once a strong word. I think it'd be entertaining, really.
Yeah, right. You'd be amused. Yeah.
I'll pick you up and hug you too, Dan, if that's what you want as well.
Dan's a chunky monkey. Y'all both tall.
I am a chunky monkey. I will be shortly after Gabby in the heart attack.
I could lift him for a second or two, I think.
Who would win in a fight?
No, yeah, you can lift Mike. He's only like 5'2".
No, I'm talking about you. I could lift you, I think. Just briefly.
Yeah.
If you jump a little bit at the same time.
I'd have to jump a little bit.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on, Michael. It's been very nice, I think.
Best of luck with the mixtape.
I'm gonna stay on for Richard. Can I stay on for Richard?
Keep that mixtape thing going, Mike. It'll work out.
Yeah, no, we feel good about it. We both feel very good.
As the lead designer, I'm sure you had quite the hand. And if you need any assistance at all with you know, the rules, you just holler at me. I'm sure I can.
I am talking to my legal team to see if 5% of participation warrants a co-design. Mm. But, I'll hear back from that soon. Dan and I think, are a good pair, a good partnership. We were just talking about that earlier. I think you and Gabby
must be nice.
Are a good partnership as well.
Indeed.
Sometimes. When it hits just right.
So let's peek behind the curtain for the listeners. If I leave session, it's not going to mess up your recording,
absolutely,
correct?
Not.
No, I don't think so.
We will continue.
All right. On. I'm going to try to, although you see this leave session button that I'm clicking right now?
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nothing happening.
No, do we have to... Kick him out.
Maybe I can kick you out.
Kick out Mike.
Yeah, because it's blanked out for me.
Here we go. I'm going to kick you out,
Mike. Don't close the screen,
remove from session.
You won't upload and then...
Not move backstage. Remove from session. And he's gone. Bye-bye.
Bye, Michael.
Swing low.
Bye.
And he's gone. All I'm seeing now is Dan and his salt lamp.
Dan and my salt... I've got two salt lamps in this room.
Do you like salt lamps?
I like the soft orange glow of a salt lamp.
Do you lick your salt
lamp? Apparently they heal me with radiation. I have licked my salt lamp. They taste like salt. It is true. Have you licked a salt lamp?
I have.
Did it taste like salt?
It did. I don't think you're supposed to.
I don't typically lick lamps.
I lick lamps.
Say it loud. I'll say it proud. I lick lamps.
I'm a lamp licker from way back.
I lick lighting. I will not apologize.
So anyway,
are you going to just leave it recording, or are you going to stop it?
No, we're still recording. We're just recording forever.
Do you want me to go ahead and see?
Right, okay. I can leave if you could be too confusing.
No, this is by far not confusing at all.
It won't be any more confusing than what we just had. I just need to shoot him an invite. And we're continuing on after Michael has left.
Well, Michaelis,
sadly. But we do still have Daniel.
I never get to talk to Dan. Dan, you're like my third favorite person in board gaming media. Third favorite. Pleasant. I'm not going to list. I've ranked you because I know you like Order from Chaos type thing, which is probably your best idea ever, which you didn't follow through with. And I've always appreciated, of course, the child labor that you utilize for your board game and your board game itself. I've gone somewhere on record saying that I thought it was the, what did I call it? Gabby, I can't remember, not titular.
Masterpiece?
No, it was just, the first time I played it, it made me mad. I sat there and was angry. I mean, I felt...
your genius.
Yes, because it was like, this should have existed already. This should have been a thing.
It should have been, really. I mean, to be honest, we didn't do anything massively innovative. It was just all iterative, in actual fact. But yeah, it should have done. I don't know why it doesn't. There's lots of things I don't know why they don't exist, especially around kids' games.
And this, I remember when you were designing it, and take this as praise, I guess, from one father to the next. You were talking about one of the mechanics of when, you know, they roll the dice, don't get something, they can flip their character, and now their character's not exerted, but they're putting extra effort into the role. They basically now.
Yeah.
And I thought.
Determined is what
it was. What it was called?
Determined.
Determined, that's right. And I remember the first time I played it, my son, who is a bit of a wuss when it comes to, when it comes to losing, and especially even at a co-op game, like if he rolls something and something goes wrong, he's just automatically frustrated. And when he rolled the dice and of course something went wrong and now he's mad and I go, but look, now you're determined. And I flipped the character over and his attitude completely changed. And he was like, oh yeah, next time. And then he rolled the dice next time. And of course it worked out. And I remember thinking, this is something that could only been designed by a father figure who has played with kids and knows the feeling of when your kid does something and it doesn't work out. And short of you just cheating, it's all, you know, but this feeling of what? Look, now they're determined. That was, to me, that stood out as a very brilliant addition to the game that's so simple that every parent that plays this game with their kids goes, oh yeah, that just makes sense. Why isn't every game this way? Like this is exactly what you need. Yeah. Plus all
get a little bit of a bonus for yeah. Although to be fair, that came out of play testing. I'm not even sure how much of my idea that was, how much of a play tester's idea it was. But no, that's one of the two things I'm most proud of. I like the cool down track the game along, and I like the determined. I think they're the two things that are relatively unique to the game. And aren't quite as derivative of the genre.
So when do you think that you're going to move on to making adult board games and get out of the elementary level? Do you think you're going to progress?
Well, we sort of have. Mike and I have designed two games now. We've designed, I made you a mixtape, and we've designed a new game, a Trick Taker, set in 1800s, I think, in the Luddite movement in Huddersfield, called Enoch's Hammer. So got two, but we're not sure what we're going to do with them. That's the problem. We don't know if we're going to kickstart them. We don't know if we're going to try and get a publisher. We're just kind of flailing around with them a little bit.
How come there's no publisher?
And Enoch's Hammer needs a bit more development.
How come there's no
new one?
No, I love the name, Enoch's Hammer. That just sounds like a
battleship.
Yes, Enoch's Hammer. I like
it. It's really good, isn't it?
Is it really a hammer? It's a hammer, right? Like the big splitting kind?
Yeah, it's from the Luddite movement. So the Luddites were working class Yorkshiremen. And some Nottingham, Midlandsmen, who their jobs were being taken by the Industrial Revolution. So they attacked factories and broke weaving looms and things like that. And Enoch was one of the manufacturers of the looms, but he also made big sledgehammers, this company, Enoch, blah, 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 and son. So one of the sayings was, Enoch made them and Enoch will smash them. Enoch's hammers, big sledgehammers they used to use to smash these looms. The Luddites is fascinating. This isn't particularly, the tone has shifted, ladies and gentlemen. The tone has shifted, but the Luddites were a fascinating social movement. a real working class kind of rebellion, which never got anywhere, and they ended up getting a lot of them got hanged because they killed murdered a mill owner, and they all got hanged, and they brought in the at one point there was more soldiers fighting the Luddites in the north of England than there was fighting Napoleon in France.
And they threw their wooden shoes into the looms that were called sabots.
sabotage.
That might be in the French. I don't know.
They said it was Dutch. It was the Dutch. And you know how I feel about the Dutch.
They've always got clogs, the Dutch.
Netherlands. So, Holland. Get it figured out.
That's where the term clog up the machine comes
from. Clogs. I think it is.
Yeah.
Dutch.
So if this theme of the Luddite movement doesn't stick, I say go with a dreadnought class battle cruiser blowing up aliens and make that a trick taking game somehow. Just change the theme just a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
Speaking of Luddites,
like I said, it's only been my entire purpose to get a game set for this field. But no, that's fine. You switched the theme of my game.
I immediately made it more interesting
some kind
as well.
Of militaristic fantasy. Nobody which wants goes along with your country and very nicely.
Another boring British countryside game. Might as well just make Arl, Fields of Arl, part two.
Wouldn't catch the UK getting all military and invading people.
Okay, so we're fighting. Richard, American Richard has come in.
Look who's back!
Speaking of Luddites.
Your network is struggling, so the internet tells me.
I'm trying.
Network is struggling.
The struggle is real for Richard's internet.
We replaced it one goat.
We can hear you. We've had storms. We've had storms, and we're having
in Scotland. You'll have storms
for whatever reason.
No, they have storms.
It's just making an absolute.
It's the gale.
The northern gales.
Don't have storms.
I thought you'll live.
Gale force winds and storms and.
You don't have tornadoes like we do here, though. You've never had tornadoes, correct?
We do. No, UK is the world's epicenter for tornadoes. It's just they're very small.
Yeah,
that's true.
It is.
Yeah.
They're very small. Yeah. Do they touch the ground?
Small. Little tornadoes?
I don't know. I've never witnessed one. I think they're incredibly small.
Dwarf tornadoes.
Well, inconsequential.
In the little town. No, go ahead, because this is fascinating.
I'm basically regurgitating a fact I heard down the pub type thing. So I'm not saying this is accurate, but Richard may know. Richard's a meteorologist. That's his hobby is meteorology.
He looks like somebody who locks the weather.
I am also a deep dive sewage worker as well, which is why I currently feel like I've just been dropped in the khaki by Mr. Hughes.
They're using weird words we don't know, Jerry.
I understand those words. In Oklahoma, in the little town I live in, we just celebrated celebrate. Back in 1945, the entire town was wiped out, and this was the anniversary of that date. In April, a tornado came through and killed everybody, like 100-something people back in 1945. And it was just this, it was really back before they were really recording tornadoes in terms of their size and their damage, the F scale,
Fajita.
Fajita scale. If it's sizzling, you know it's good. It's an F5. Which we're really looking forward to the remake of Twisters.
Oh, it's gonna be awesome!
Oh, it's gonna be great! There we got debris, but yeah, it came through the 1945 and killed everybody, and we still talk about it because everybody
celebrated.
We celebrate it. We remember the
Huzzah!
Day.
Huzzah! Everyone was dead.
Remember when we were two? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, they can't keep us out of here. We're back, tornado.
Who's to say we'll build back? We did, and so now we're back, and
it just keeps wiping you out.
And we changed the name of the town because of that.
So we do also have on Richard Simpson of We're Not Werewolves, and his network is struggling.
My network is always struggling. If there's like an entire thing to sum up.
Before we lose you, Richard, I'm really enjoying your podcast now that you have your prior host with you. I think it's really good. I like it a lot better. I think you're better with a co-host. I've often told you need a co-host. Because co-hosts...
But, I mean, I took your advice.
You need it. And stop interviewing all these designers. Nobody in the board game industry cares about designers. Nobody. I wish we did.
I
I'm the only person who cares about designers.
What was your most listened to podcast with whichever designer? Do you know?
I like the one for the...
I asked Richard a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Jeez, won't
Jamie, shut up. Jamie Stegmaier always kind of brings in the numbers.
Jamie Stegmaier.
Everybody likes... And you know... Okay, and you know why he brings in the numbers? Because he's one of these... He is one of these
dogs over there puking on carpet.
Doing something unspeakable.
If you heard Jamie's name, the dog caught sight.
He's one of these rising people, right? And I knew this was a mistake coming up. You're never going to get a word in edge.
Just start yelling pendulum, and your dog's going to crap on the carpet. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, he's not. He's got a cold. He's got a bunged up nostril.
He's like dragging his butt.
He's not doing the dragging his butt thing. You don't want to be doing the dragging his butt thing.
It's Richard but doing the dragging his butt thing. Look at him. He's scooting across the floor.
they ran out of toilet paper there. They didn't.
Sorry.
I know what Jamie knows.
We asked you a question, and then we...
What are you going to say, Richard?
Chaos. Go ahead, Richard. I'm sorry. We're listening.
What Jamie does, oh my goodness. It's like he can't even say a thing. It's like, do you know what? This is what I got, right? Is I got from Gabby. Why don't you come on the show? And come on the show, and we can talk, and we can have a big celebration of 300 people. And then Jerry's like, yeah, come on the show, because that would be fun. We could all talk, and then we could have Enrique on the show, which I'm not going to do an impression of Enrique, because that's not nice. And then I come on the show, and then you're just not letting me speak. So,
no, you can speak now.
That's what I say.
There you go.
But anyway, what I'm saying is that one of the things that Jamie does very, very well is when Jamie appears on something like a podcast or a show or a YouTube guest slot, he tells other people about it.
Yeah.
And if there's one bugbear that kind of, which is why I'm kind of erring on not having as many people on the show as I used to, as not everybody does it, and it's not a direct accusation, but, and I think this kind of goes across everything with regards to kind of like, podcasts and reviews and videos and stuff like that, is that you'll do something like a podcast and you'll say, yeah, here you go, and I'll share it out there, and then they don't share it or tell anybody about it, and you're just like, look, I don't care, it's like, it's your Kickstarter, you know.
Yeah, well, we feel the same way. We're what actually started Sporadically Bored by us sharing our appearances on there, and that kind of cross pollinated their podcast.
How dare you? I was just thinking that I was recently on Richard's podcast, and I think I didn't share it. But that's because I don't do social media.
Another designer.
I'm away.
This is like the Maury Povich show. We're like, Richard, we have a special guest for you here today.
Yes, you're not promoting anything, though, Dan. I mean, it's not. If you were coming on talking about like another Cora Quest expansion or one of your, or you're like pushing the published book, and it's like people like you spend the time, you organize the interview, you come on, like a lot of them, it's like a baptism of fire because they've never done a podcast
before. Yeah.
And then you say, okay, here's the file, here's the link, and you hear nothing. And it doesn't happen all the time. And I'm generally people, it's really funny, generally most people are really cool and they do share it, but there's a couple of people I'm just like, why did we, you know, I guess,
why did I even have you on? We had on Jeff Foxworthy. Did he talk about us anywhere? Not a word.
Jeff,
the bigger the guest you have, the less likely they are to
talk. They don't care about you.
I have found something very interesting regarding the listeners of these podcasts.
They're all idiots. Everyone listening to this is an idiot.
Well, interestingly enough, I have found a lot of cross-pollination.
Very serious. That's the difference between us.
As I have recently had the honor of being the commenter of the month on 5 Games for Doomsday, which I have not even talked about. But I joined the Discord of a great Ben Maddox and whoever I can't remember his co-host. But
their
podcast listeners are the same as our podcast listeners, which tend to be the same podcast listeners to Sporadically Bored and to this guy down here, Richard Simpson, which is very odd. So it just means that the same people listen to us as a whole, like a network,
a black hole,
if you would. Which means we somehow attract the same frustrated members of the board game community. And I think that that is our strength. So it's like we're the Avengers of the board gaming community, and we have united in this.
We're just bringing We're bringing all the incels in one place.
Correct.
That, yeah. That's what you're saying.
And
Jerry,
we didn't even have our incel on. Enrique, I think that's why everybody likes Enrique. They see themselves in Enrique.
He's the relatable one.
He is the relatable one. And
the relatable incel.
Yes. That would be a great podcast. Hello, everybody. The other day, I was in the drive-thru and I saw
admiring someone from afar.
And I thought to myself,
exactly.
This could
I was on the bus and I hadn't showered for like 14 days.
This could be the one.
Oh, 14 days. Would 14 days.
That's right.
14 days.
I do appreciate all of your impressions of you that you do of me or the Southern accent, at least. But Ben
it's
does.
So cliche.
Ben Jeez. Does a better job. Stop Ben does a great job of it. Ben's an impression of me. Yes, he does. But Ben's an actor.
Does he?
He's classy.
Ben is like, that's his job.
Well, I mean, is he? Is he an actor? He acted once.
And he's still, yes, he's an actor.
Have you ever like downloaded a script and tried to like do a scene from a movie with somebody you know?
I have.
It's very difficult.
It is.
What we're going to do, Steel Magnolias. Richard and I both used to be thespians ourselves. Didn't you used to be a thespian, Richard? I used to be a thespian.
How so?
Yeah.
I used to do amateur dramatics. I used to be in plays. I used to be in productions. I used to make short films.
You are theatrical, that's for sure.
Youth. That's something that we lack in America. We don't appreciate the stage as much.
But that's because when you talk, you've only got one stage thing, and that's that joke, isn't it? It's like, you know, that thing where it's like, you should be on the stage. The next one leaves in an hour. It's like it's an old joke. But, you know, it's completely American.
He's talking about stagecoach.
Yeah, yes, he knows. You have to explain the jokes.
We have Broadway. That's like all we have. Besides the local theater run by high schoolers, which is terrible.
So we don't have the theatrical experience that y'all do. And I think that a lot of Americans just view movies as being the theater. Like that's not.
Like I'm going to the theater.
I don't like that because it's a completely different experience. It's more visceral when you see it live, and when it's a one-time performance.
Is that why people's minds got blown when they did the live recording of Hamilton? Because Hamilton was like the hot potato for ages, and then all of a sudden, it like they do the film version at the stage, and it's like. They filmed it and put it on Disney Plus, and everybody went absolutely crazy.
Remember
for
what
it.
Clint
they absolutely? I loved it.
Like Clint Eastwood did that with Jersey Boys, and even certain television series did a live episode. Like ER did that once, where they just all right, this is live, brilliant. And people just lost their mind. Oh, and they don't realize is that there is something different about watching something where you can see the actors on stage, and it's all about. Not so much the production, but what emotions can they exhibit and impart to you in person? Like, that's different when it's done 100 times on film and you can just watch it ad nauseum. But there is something different when you're sitting down looking at a stage and you're watching somebody pour themselves out to you in such a way.
And I think it triggers your imagination a little bit more for me. Like when I see a stage production.
I did Godspell and I played Jesus in Godspell. And I remember there's like this part where you do the speech where you're just about to get, you know, you're about to get crucified. So you're like basically shouting it, like your dad saying, what are you doing? Come on. What's going on here? But because of the way the theater was, I was right down on the stage, like lying down on the stage. And you were able to actually look out and pick out somebody, a couple of people in the audience and actually look them and catch their eyes and just watch their faces. It's kind of like, oh, they're kind of interacting with us kind of thing. But if you came along the next night, you would get a slight kind of difference nuance in the performance. So I think every kind of performance that you give, it's like podcasting. I mean, if we came back and did this show again, you know, it'd be a slightly different experience. We could try and aim to hit the same kind of topics. And I've done it before where I've had to re-record a show that's broken and re-record it again from the beginning when the audio went. And there's the kind of the flow of it slightly differently because you're doing like a slightly different take on stuff and the kind of the rhythm is slightly different as well. Whereas you're right with movies, you know, you keep repeating the scene until you get what the director thinks the scene should be, as opposed to the director basically at the side, when they're watching it from the side of the stage, which they always do, they just have to hope that they hit the general emotional beats and the individual nuance of the performance will potentially change. Ben would probably argue that, you know, basically a performance should be exactly the same. If you're doing a play for 6 or 7 nights, then that performance should be exactly the same for all 6 or 7 nights, because you've got like, hey, you're a paid professional. So I think that's the big difference maybe between the amateur stuff.
I've always had the Jesus in my mind was always the Rip Jesus, and now it's been replaced with the Dick Simpson Jesus.
What was Dan going to say?
Yeah, what were you? What were you, yeah,
I was just going to say,
did you do?
I did lots of pantomimes, these guys won't understand what a pantomime is.
I have a brief understanding of pantomime.
I've been in a box before.
I want to see one desperately.
Oh, they're absolutely fantastic. It's absolutely wonderful. It's born from the old music hall kind of tradition. It's usually put on around Christmas time. It's for families. There's heaps of audience interaction. There's all sorts of kind of traditional lines that the audience shouts at the stage. Just, you know, he's behind you and all this kind of stuff. And usually it's about a fairy tale. There's usually a man dressed as a woman called the Dame, who's a comedy character. There's usually a woman dressed as a boy who's a lead character. So like Jack from Jack and the Beanstalk, that'll be a woman dressed up as a man. Anyway, I did loads and loads of pantomimes. I did the pantomime kind of every year for about 15 years. And then I did the Crucible. I did various other things. But really, I enjoy doing the pantomimes because I love a bit of panto.
And see,
I actually think that's one of the reasons why the theatre is slightly. Not everybody in the UK goes to the theatre every night. You know what I mean? I think it's a bit of an exaggeration to assume that. But I think the theatre is seen as more accessible in the UK because of the pantomime traditions and the fact that a lot of people go to the theatre during the Christmas period to see this traditionally. And I think that kind of accessibility and the kind of it's not blue collar or working class, it's just all classes is the theatre opened up for pantomime season.
It was music halls. I mean, most towns or cities had some kind of music hall venue where everybody kind of got together at some point, you know, and you know, we've got two of them in our city. It's really interesting. We had one that was like, it'd fallen into disrepair. And then a couple of the local theatre groups decided to kind of basically reopen it, put a lot of money into it, just time and effort and volunteering stuff. And now it's getting some of the biggest names in kind of UK, kind of the comedy circuit, kind of coming up and doing gigs, because it's a traditional huge stage, big seats, big kind of bluster and you know, all that kind of loveliness, gold kind of ribboning everywhere and big, huge red velvet curtains and everything like that. And it's like funny. I mean, going back to the pantomime thing, it's like the whole thing about when people were talking in America about having drag queens reading kids' stories. And like, some in America were going, oh my goodness, imagine having guys dressed as women reading stories to kids. It's like, oh my goodness. It's like, and then it was interesting to see the discourse coming back from the UK where folk going, we had pantomimes for years where it was like, literally everybody loved kind of like Widow Twanky, because the Widow Twanky or the kind of the Dame was always the person who was talking slightly to the adults, more over than the children. So they kind of always made the slightly
Ian McKellen does stuff. Ian McKellen does one every year. He plays a pantomime Dame, so every year. Well, not every year, but he certainly does it a lot.
And I think that's the difference. Is one, the theater being so accessible in England and over there, over the pond. Whereas here in America, it does seem like our creative endeavors of that sort tend to lean more towards, like, you're more likely to start your own garage band than you are to ever think, I'm going to be on stage and be some sort of thespian. Right. You're gonna buy a guitar, electric guitar, you're going to find somebody who can play the bass, and then you're going to convince one of your friends to learn the drums, and then you're going to be Green Day. Or now stand-up comedy. Everybody in America thinks they're the funniest thing ever, and they're not. And that's why we have Patton Oswalt and various others. But it's the fact that everybody likes Patton Oswalt. I don't like him. I beg somebody to please send me something funny of him. I want to like him so much. I want to love that man. I just don't like him. I don't think he's funny. I want to find him funny desperately. It's the same thing with
Your train of thought
with Brian Regan. I want to find him funny. He's not funny. The same thing with your
you
British...
find Mike Birbiglia Jerry. Funny. Mike Birbiglia Jerry. Funny.
Yes, I heard my Jerry. Name. Yes, Richard.
Jerry, have you ever seen What We Do in the Shadows? Have you ever seen What We Do in the Shadows?
I have not. I have that on.
There's you haven't, right? There's an episode. It's all about vampires. It's incredibly funny and it's worthwhile checking out. But there's an episode where Patton Oswalt's in it and you should watch it.
Okay.
Because something very unfortunate happens to him.
Okay. I will watch it.
If you're not on the Patton Oswalt train, there's an episode where he's in and you could probably check it out on YouTube and find it. And yeah, if you're not a big fan, I think he's one of these, you know, one of these people that continually does, he turns up in animations.
And yes, he just shows up and stuff. I think I went down a rabbit hole recently, and it was a British comedian who was in one of the films that I dearly loved. It was Mousetrap, I think, or something of that nature.
Oh, Lee Evans.
Lee Evans. I did not know he was a comedian. We'd never heard of Lee Evans over here. And for some reason, that film popped into my brain, and I made my kids watch it. And I'm like, this is funny. Do you not think this is funny? And I'm like, who is this Lee Evans guy? And I looked him up, and apparently he's somewhat respected as a comedian in England, I guess. But he's very facial. He's
Jim Carrey.
He's on a lot of cocaine or something. He moves.
He's not. I mean, is he Jim? He's not that Jim. I think he's not Jim Carrey.
No, he's like more of a Brian Regan of their type. Like he does these facial gestures. But
he's a Norman Wisdom. He's Norman Wisdom. So he's often who is the UK's version of Jerry Lewis.
There you go, Jerry Lewis.
He's a Jerry Lewis. He's very much an old-fashioned physical comedian.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not that
he was in a...
Go ahead.
He was in a film called Funny People, I think.
With Jerry Lewis,
Yeah, and he was... If you want to watch a film with Lee Evans in it, he's brilliant in that film. It's all about a comedian kind of turns and stuff like that. And it's just... It's a phenomenal film. I remember watching that and being spellbound from it all the way through. Because it's obviously Jerry Lewis is in it. He's kind of like trying to figure out why he's kind of slowly losing his powers of being funny.
Which is, I mean, we've all struggled with that, I personally.
Modern stage, the theater, I would say the kids don't care about it because they just want to be influencers, instant fame. They just want 100,000 to 1,000,000 followers, do something goofy repeatedly, and then they're on TikTok or Instagram. Boom. Why go through the hard work of going through acting school and all that stuff when you can get Insta famous?
That's been always the case, though, you old curmudgeon.
Yeah, you know.
People always want to be pop stars. People always want to be football stars.
But they couldn't be. Like, overnight, it's sensations.
Well, they still can't be.
Well, they generally can't be Instagram famous either.
It's a minute
with no skill,
but
no schooling.
Well, I will say that there are a lot of talentless hacks that are famous for whatever reasons. Well, I said famous. recently, my daughter,
as I say, my talent has excluded me. I'm a talentless hack. Well, I think, but this will be something that Dan will be aware of when he was doing his pantomimes. He was probably, you have an entire process of being on book, then off book. So you've got your script to learn, and then you've got to be off book, and then you've got to rehearse and stuff like that. And you're right in relation to the influencers. A lot of these folk that they get famous for doing the same thing repeatedly, don't they? They do one thing, they do it for 30 seconds, and then they get like thousands and thousands of views, so they keep doing it. There's no, it's not effort, but it's not earned, is it? I mean, some people can, you see that, you see people who get famous really, really quickly, but they burn out so quickly because they've not got anything behind them to keep them going.
There's
to
no allow creativity.
Them to do anything else. They're famous for like one thing and that's it. There's no creativity behind them. They got lucky and that's it.
My daughter's about to turn 13, and so thus she has become a Taylor Swift fan. And I have never listened to a Taylor Swift song. I just knew I didn't like Taylor Swift.
I like Taylor Swift.
And so I had to start listening to Taylor Swift, and I found out that she's fine. She's okay.
She's like, it's not a good song.
She's got a lot of good songs. And not bad. And so it's like, okay, yeah, there's worse things you could like. But then my daughter made this comment about Taylor Swift being the greatest singer-songwriter ever. And I had to have this long conversation regarding...
Has she heard of the Beatles?
Your knowledge base and how you can really like somebody. But to make that statement, you really have to be... You have to know more. Which caused me to now do this deep dive into saving songs on my YouTube music. And then when we're riding in the car going... Have you ever heard of this person and playing these random songs and letting her hear music and going, what about this person? What about this person? And it's interesting that I guess because of what we experience in life and what we see, and I keep recalling back to like the American experience of not seeing a lot of theater and everything being on TikTok and everybody being an influencer, that's our mindset, how that affects what we think is good. And how we, and I would transition to the same thought on podcasts to try to bring this down to something more relatable. There are tons of board games podcasts that talk about board games in the same exact way. I think what kind of gravitates people towards, like say for instance, what was the name of your podcast? We're Not Wizards or something like that. The reason I started to listen to that is because at the time I was interested in hearing about designers and things, and it was just you having people on. And I'm like, I can listen to this dull Scottish guy ask really good questions. You were like the, what's the name of the hot takes, the guy that makes people eat hot sauce? You were that guy of board game podcasting. You would have designers on, have these conversations. I'm like, this guy's interesting. Why doesn't anybody listen to this show? Oh, it's because... It's just Richard, and it's just how it is. And then it dawned on me that to be super popular, there's a formula that you have to follow. And if you don't follow that formula, you're not going to be that popular that quickly. To keep your creativity, you have to avoid that, which is why Dan Hughes creates a podcast every other month. And are actually somewhat decent ideas of like Order from Chaos and these other things. And what about this? What about that? And Dan's always writing, doing these creative things. And my God, every time I talk to
Dan. It's been a while since Dan's done one.
Well, every time I talk to Dan, he reveals he's done something. I've pantomimed. I'm like,
I've written a book.
And it's like, why are you so great? So
time ago.
You're so creative, Dan.
But my point is that.
I'm a god.
One of these things, one of these types, Dan's actually going to hit upon something. And it's going to be the least creative thing he's ever come up with. It's going to be the most banal thing that he's put out there, and that's going to be what takes, and it's going to actually shatter him as a person. Well, where the one thing that he does is super popular.
I kinda think like, what people like.
Kind of like Richard's tweet. That will live on for infinity.
Yeah, exactly. Talk about internet
tweet of all time. And it's like
what people like. We're going along with what you said is this format. What people like, and they do like format. People like to know what they're going to tune into and listen to every week or whatever. They like to. It's like the comfort thing. I'm guessing the because I check in on, you know, different podcasts every now and then. Of course, Board Game Barrage come on to the scene and they blown everybody out of the water. And then now there's this Board Game Hot Takes. They're very popular. They come on, they play a game, they discuss it, and you know, they're very formatted, just like all the other similar podcasts. But they're doing what they're doing. Very, very, very popular now, but they're a potential, you know, a big name podcast for the future. It's just
they're a threat, is what I'm hearing.
How can we destroy them?
Take them down.
No, I mean, because
let's start some rumors.
I've occasionally interacted with the hot take people on. I think it's on Blue Sky now or whatever.
What's and
they
Blue
seem,
Sky?
You know, they see
Blue Sky.
It's
what's
another
that?
Twitter. Good God.
Oh, it's that kind of, it's like, kind of like.
I swear, Richard like is so tuned into everything.
Truth Social. Is that what you're talking about?
No, are you talking about Gab?
That's where We're Not Wizards biggest.
We're not bigots.
That is where they all are.
Yeah, we're not bigots.
We're not 70, bigots.
70% of my audience is now from America.
Just adopt an American accent, Richard.
Go to we'renotwizards.com/dailystormer.
We could finally understand you.
Yes. I'm just wondering if I'm thinking I'm getting a lot of the old ex-clan people kind of...
The ex-clan people I used to be.
They're looking for a podcast to call home and they're going... Well, Jethro, there's something that we used to be like in the clan with our wizard stuff, and now we're not. So maybe we look for a podcast where we're not
grand wizards. Anymore.
All of your listeners come from Arkansas. I've made that same joke at some time. I'm pretty sure it got edited out of the podcast.
All right, so
you have to leave that in for copy.
I don't even know where to edit at this point.
Thank God, because we can't edit in.
But do you want to be in the situation where you've got a huge following that you need to maintain?
We just enjoy talking about what comes up naturally. But I enjoy doing this podcast because I enjoy talking to my friend and or friends about things I care about, things it can be stupid. We obviously talk about plenty of stupid, stupid stuff, but also we have genuine conversations that interest me. And I enjoy that more than let's stick to this format of what have you been up to? Let's talk about the games you played. And now here's the big game we're going to discuss. Because A, for one, especially here in the last good God year, we don't hardly play games together anymore. We don't have the time. We get to play maybe one game a month together at this point. And we're trying to stretch this. And I mean, maybe we need to go to bi-weekly or so sporadically board game snobs at some point because we just don't have the time to
I knew it was going to come down to you stealing our format. That's why I knew that she was going to happen. Look, I mean, you can either be in podcasting to try and be in podcasting to try and enjoy yourself. Sometimes if you're really lucky, they overlap with all of us, especially your podcast and our podcast. The format we enjoy doesn't lend itself to large audiences. Mm-mm. And so you either accept that and do that podcast because you enjoy doing it, or you try and chase a large audience, which, to be honest, there's no real reward in that for me, because A, there's no financial reward because no podcast is making
money. Although we do like our Patreons.
Just those.
Like people. And subscribe.
No.
Yes, follow us on Patreon. Follow the Sporadically Bored Patreon.
I will say that I don't know if at Sporadically Bored or at the Wizard Place, if y'all get a chance to meet your fans, I don't know if you have fans, but every person I have met that has been a fan of the show that I've interacted on with Facebook or Discord. I interact on them. I don't interact with. You get interacted on. And I have to say that everybody I've interacted on, such as Natty Huffman and Christian Solar.
And you can't get any of their names right.
I can't get any of their names right. All these people I like. No. And that's what cracks me up is the idea that we're attracting people
of a similar ilk.
Like they understand the struggles that I go through every day in dealing with Gabi and having him as my friend. And I think that that's such a, it's a beautiful thing that Patreon money, although please subscribe to Patreon.
We could use a few more.
Cannot replace. And I would not trade that. I think the absolute, and I'll say this because this is his 300th episode, but around the 20th episode, Gabi said, listen, let's stop trying to be so uptight and organized and have a script, and let's just talk. Let's just do it live, as he put it. And I thought that was horrible because in my time, I was like, this is the way a podcast should be done. This is the way that you get interaction. This is the way things should be. And he's like, no, let's just do our thing. And when we started doing our thing, you can listen to the podcast and go all the way back and hear how uptight we are until we're around that episode. And then it changed to where we're just having fun. And we're talking about stupid stuff. And it changed the idea of what the podcast should be to me. And now...
But then looking it changed back, again into the last like 50 episodes where we started fighting all the time.
Well, I think that's great because we had to air that out because you had problems that you needed to deal with. I
got real problems with you.
I love this.
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to completely ignore Gabi. I'm not going to look at Gabi right now. I'm just going to look at Dan, who is the mental health professional, and Richard, who is a dear friend. I'm going to call Richard a dear friend, even though Dan's also a dear friend. So by the time this podcast will come out, which will be 2 weeks from now, right?
If I can get all this garbage edited.
I will be just right before, I'll just be about to go into surgery to have a tumor removed that's been 5 years in the making.
It's not a tumor.
And it has been a very stressful time for which I have not done the healthy thing that everybody should do, which is talk about what's going on in the back of your mind. And because of that, I have acted like a complete idiot 90% of the time, not just with Gabi, but with various people. And because of that, it spilled over into the podcast. And there is this very surreal moment when you have people who are people you don't know that just listen to the podcast that are somehow just messaging you going, are you okay? Are things all right, which is weird to happen. And we lost Dan. That's okay. But it's a weird situation to where I realized not very quickly, took about 20 episodes, of how unhealthy that is not to actually be, I don't want to say self-aware, because you know what's going on, but acknowledging what the issue is and being able to confront it and deal with it rather than just bearing it down. I did the same thing that most people, especially men, tend to do, which is just bury your feelings and your fears and your frustrations and don't talk about them. And because of that, that became such a frustrating thing for me, and it spilled over into my life without me recognizing it. And at some point in time, it turned into me being frustrated with absolutely every living human being on the planet. And it spilled over, of course, into the podcast, which does.
Did you find you were going on, were you going on a self-destructive phase with it?
Absolutely.
Did you find that absolutely. You were actively kind of pushing people away, basically? Just kind of say, look, I can't deal with this. I don't know how to deal with this. I don't know how to deal with
he
you.
He was pushing
so
me away.
I'm going to call you like,
hey, shut up.
A prick or something like that. And then, or be, a, you know, stuff like that. And then push people away.
Yes, because I have so few people that you go through that middle-aged thing where you only have a handful of friends, which nobody tells you when you're a kid that, you know, you have all these friends. But as you get older, there's less and less people that you want to deal with. And there's very few people that you want in your life. And what it boils down to is that these few people that you choose to be around, those are the people for which you rely on. And I think the moment that I saw the change was when now I'm mistreating absolutely everybody. Either I'm ignoring you and I'm having nothing to do with you for the most part. I don't have to see you. I don't have to talk with you. Or I'm just actively mistreating that person, being irritated at them. And it was very quickly that I realized that there were certain metrics that had always been the case that were now no longer. And it was this complete self-destructive, I'm just doing what I normally do without making any improvement, without changing anything, without trying to be a better person. I hate that term, by the way, when everybody says, I'm trying to better myself. We're all trying to better ourselves, I guess, to some degree, unless you're not. And when you're not, that typically there is no bobbing up and down. There is no neutral ground. Either you're going forward or you're going backwards. So either you're actively trying to make yourself better or you're going backwards. And I was going backwards. And it just became a very stressful thing, which I took out upon absolutely everybody in my life. And finally, once it dawned on me of what this sentinel event was going on and what was actually bothering me, it was very easy for me to now recognize and now go, I just need to change this. And I think that people go through that in their life at certain times and they don't realize it. Like either it can be a form of depression or anxiety or something that they're going through. And they don't realize that they're stagnant and that they're going backwards and what they're doing. And I think the only reason it caught my attention is because naturally I'm a very difficult person. I think that me and you are probably quite a lot, Richard. We're probably very difficult people to live with. You look like a difficult person with your goatee and your receding hairline.
I am. my goatee and my receding hairline and my my ability to
Dan missed your to annoy. Large spiel.
You I just went through a very large spiel, Dan, where I talked about my deep appreciation for all that you do.
I know. I'm sorry. I know. I caught the first 5 seconds of it, and then it just all froze.
It's okay. Basically, I'm a complete and total jerk for not recognizing my issues and dealing with them and pushing everybody away and being self-destructive.
But everybody does that.
But not everybody does
to
that.
To a degree at some point.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
I think most people
I've never done it. No.
You know what? You know what realization I came to? And this was...
Please, make it all about you.
Yeah, let's hear about you some more, Gabby.
This has to do with the eclipse. And I discovered this, and this is maybe the first time I actually felt this way, and I felt good about feeling this way. The eclipse was a big thing here in America. I don't know. We may have discussed it on episode 299. I don't know yet.
It bypassed y'all.
So the eclipse for me and for
several, we never see the sun in Scotland. It's not a novelty in Scotland.
Right. But to see it in totality was quite amazing. One of the most amazing things I've ever seen of natural phenomena in my life, and probably until I'm dead, because the next one's like 400 years from now. Unless I go to Fayetteville in 20 years and I'm still alive, which I doubt I will be. But anyway, so Jerry saw it.
They say that, but the last one I remember was 20 years ago. So
there you go. Yeah, but I mean, it's going to be somewhere. You're going to have to drive to it or fly to it.
Hang in there, big guy.
Jerry, of course, and I knew, knowing Jerry, he was going to be, I don't get the big deal. And, you know, he calls me, and of course, he's like, I don't see what everybody was. And this is the first time I felt this in my soul. And it's a good thing. I thought to myself, okay, I don't need you to care about it for me to have cared about it. I enjoyed it tremendously. It was we were out there with our friends and family. We watched it, and I thought it was absolutely one of the most beautiful things I've seen with my eyes. And Jerry's like, I thought it was kind of meh. And usually when Jerry says something like that, it triggers me into like, well, I want him to feel like I did. But in this situation, I'm like, okay, you know, I enjoyed it. I don't need you to have enjoyed it for me to enjoy it. And I need to develop that a little bit more in my life. Not to be so invested in what other people think.
I've been telling you that for years.
I know you have. You have. But it's like, but then sometimes you'll try to go the opposite with me because you'll trigger me with saying, well, why did you enjoy it so much? And then I don't need to tell you. I just did. I can't explain it to you, but well, I did.
No, I don't ask that. I ask that to understand because I think that,
but we do it in general with like a lot of stuff we do board gaming wise and right. Just our podcast. That's our back and forth. But in this particular instance, I had this feeling of, I don't need you to enjoy it.
And I didn't enjoy it. I felt good
in my heart feeling. I felt an inner satisfaction of, I'm okay with no one else enjoying this thing that I quite enjoyed.
Kind of like how you enjoy anime and I don't. I've tried.
Avatar Last Airbender.
I've tried. I'm going to keep trying because one of these days I'm going to enjoy anime. I want to.
And really, I'm with you, Jerry. I don't get anime.
I don't watch anime. That's Enrique. You're confusing me again.
It's a cartoon.
But so here's the thing. So ultimately, though, that would be a good feeling for most people in the world is, but of course it would stop all the trolling on the internet, which is, you know, some people enjoy that, Jerry.
I love trolling on the internet.
But it's like most people on the internet, everyone wants you to enjoy or hate, feel the same feelings as you feel. They want that community experience, I guess.
I don't need,
But that's what I'm saying. So in this instance, I felt like Jerry because I didn't care what you thought.
I'm glad you felt that way because I think that's important for everybody to have their own tastes. I have fought for years about certain things being objective or subjective. And I think my intensity about trying to figure out and question what exactly things people like comes across as I'm demanding that they justify what they like when actually I just want to understand what it is about this certain facet. For instance, anytime we look at a board game, I can almost tell you exactly what it is that I like about it. I can tell you what I like about CoreQuest and why I think it's
a genius.
It's a work of genius. And it's not just I hate, although I am the complete total the dichotomy here of me being a generalist of just saying things that are broad. I hate it when people just go, I don't know, I just like it. I should be okay with people doing that. And I think that's why I always liked Richard's podcast. I feel like I'm very complimentary to you or two, and I don't really know why I'm being so complimentary. It's because I've been drinking so much of this Knob Creek.
I have no idea.
The Single Berry Reserve.
Probably.
Single barrel.
I am told. I become incredibly attractive the more people drink.
I've tried the Knob Creek. By the way, during this 300 podcast, I'm trying to find out which bourbon that Gobby's dad bought I like best. So far, the Wild Turkey Rare Breed is good. Knob Creek was better. This is Four Roses. Hang on one second. Four Roses, small batch.
That Knob Creek is good stuff.
It's very light.
The 9 years. Well, you're talking like 120 proof versus like 90.
I love 120 proof. I like it to burn. We have
what
the same glasses, Richard.
Like Julia Roberts and Runaway Bride, basically. Because there's a thing Richard Gere is going about to all the people that Julia Roberts has jilted at the altar.
Mm-hmm.
And he asks one question of them, which is, how did you say she liked her eggs? And it turns out that she likes her eggs whatever way her boyfriend or fiancé at the time liked. So one of the subplots in it was actually Julia Roberts discovering her having an opinion of how she liked her eggs, not based on what other people liked, but her own opinion. So I guess what I'm saying is, in this case, Gabby is almost like the Julia Roberts of this piece.
He's a prostitute.
They don't care about other people kind of like, you know, other people are kind of like, if they say they like scrambled eggs, then Gabby likes scrambled eggs. If they say they like kind of like their eggs kind of fried, then sunny side up, then, you know, that's how Gabby likes it, because he sees the enjoyment of these people enjoying their eggs. Whereas Jerry is the type of guy that's like, I like boiled eggs and I don't care what anybody
else
says.
I like poached eggs. I ate poached eggs this morning.
For that. I love
poached eggs.
Ooh.
Poached eggs are the...
There you go.
And I don't know why they're not a bigger
thing. But you don't need somebody else to enjoy poached eggs for you to enjoy poached eggs.
I think it was
you don't need to see the person sitting next to you enjoying poached eggs. You know?
Poached eggs, is that where you drop it in the boiling water?
Yes, it is. And it wasn't Richard Higgins or Charles Higgins that said that what was his great quote about being right but being in the minority? He has a very fancy saying. Please look that up. It's one of my favorite quotes. And if it wasn't for this Knob Creek, I would be able to quote it. But basically, I can enjoy something with everybody else hating it. And it does irritate me when...
See, that's... that's the quote of the show. If it wasn't for this Knob Creek...
I'm sorry. I told you this Knob Creek is rough.
It's a usual thing they call Gobby. If it wasn't for this Knob Creek...
Although, to be fair, most of Jerry's quotes are incorrect.
They are. I'm wrong a lot, but the fact is that I don't care to be wrong.
You don't acknowledge you're wrong.
No, I acknowledge it in my head, which is the most important space that I have. The fact is that being wrong is such a... Really, how do you know if you're wrong?
Facts.
That's true.
Science.
But the fact is that me and Dan don't deal with right or wrong.
Bring me into this.
Dan, I need help. We deal with what we feel is the way things should be.
We deal with the absolutes of the heart, Jerry.
Yes.
We deal with the absolutes of the heart. Not for us is the wishy-washy facts.
Dan,
so-called facts came from ChatGPT.
Dan, what's your favorite movie?
My favorite movie is Lord of the Rings, unfortunately. Not unfortunately.
I keep telling myself I'm going to watch that, and I have it saved because I have actually got the books, and I thought to myself, I'm going to read this, and I'm going to watch this.
There are books as well?
Yes.
Save yourself the time and just watch Neverending Story.
This is why I hate him. I did cry when that dog thing got drowned.
Although of course, recently, and they've aged quite significantly in the Lord of the Rings films, which surprised me.
Really?
The CGI used to be flawless,
top notch,
and now it's like, oh look, oh.
Mr. Simpson, what's your favorite movie?
He's chewing his fingernails Enrique style.
I appreciate that about you. You don't watch a lot of movies.
Runaway Bride. It's Runaway Bride. Yeah. He's already told us.
Runaway Bride. The Prestige, I think.
That is a great film. And you know why I like that? I love movies that they
do. Y'all see how literally you could say anything and Jerry can go on a 10-minute discussion of his opinion of what you just said.
That's why I'm the star. I love that movie.
Leaving very little room for anyone else to talk. But when you do, he shouts at you for interrupting his 20-minute diatribes.
I can't find any quote about liking things from Charles Dickens, by the way. Charles
Dickens?
Are you sure it was Charles Dickens?
No, Lindbergh. Richard Dawkins. Not Richard Dawkins. Oh, no.
Very, very.
Wait, no. Not him. Higgins. I said Higgins.
From Magnum P.I.?
Higgins. The Higgins.
Higgins from Magnum P.I.?
No, the guy that used to debate everybody about religion.
The sailing coach?
Richard Higgins. No, Charles Higgins. Give me a moment.
Good God. Please. Richard or Charles?
For goodness
sake. I can't remember. He's
Richard
dead.
Richard Higgins. He died. You're thinking about Charles Xavier from the X-Men movies. Richard
he died Higgins. Of cancer. He was bald.
He didn't. He's still alive. He's in a wheelchair. He's played by Patrick Stewart.
Charles.
This is not.
When does this podcast end?
It doesn't.
It's three hours long.
This is the one.
I've
already been on this call for 2 hours. I'm regretting staying on now.
I could have been away reading to my kids.
Christopher Higgins. Christopher Higgins. Christopher Higgins.
That's the guy from Winnie the Pooh, right?
You've never heard of Christopher Higgins. I swear.
Random philosopher.
He's one of the most famous philosophers ever. Gobby, please
Christopher
don't.
Christopher Robin, that you didn't even know his name the first five times we asked you.
I said it was the Knob Creek.
Charles Dawkins, no Richard Higgins.
You plied me with this cheap single barrel.
How dare
you? You didn't buy it. Your dad did.
That one I did. The first one's gone. Long gone.
Oh, okay. Anyways, my point being,
I'm just interested, Jerry. What's the worst thing about Gabby? Do you think what thing do you think
the
is worst
thing
about
Gabby? I can tell you exactly the first thing.
Apparently, listen to like three podcasts.
No. Don't answer that. I was jokingly trying to end this podcast. Do not answer that, Gabby. What's the worst thing about? What's the best thing about me? Let's all talk about what the best thing about me is.
Okay, now, Daniel Hughes.
Let's talk about what's the worst thing about Richard Simpson. I think we can all agree on those.
You like it? Well, the worst thing is, there's lots of...
His voice is wonderful, Richard Simpson.
There's very, very...
Christopher
very,
Higgins, very, a civil and environmental engineering...
Christopher Higgins.
Y'all didn't even let poor Richard finish. Because, Richard, you hem-hawed too long. You said Aram, and then, like, it was a long pause. You know what's interesting?
Well, okay.
No, so how about Dan, you let Richard speak?
Dan Hughes is like a Rumpelstiltskin, if I'm going to say things about, and is that he's a stellar community building.
What is that, a demon?
It's insane the way that he can kind of corral a community and get it together and get people kind of like getting involved and actually interacting. Because I join lots of groups on Facebook. And the sporadically bored one still keeps on going. There's still people that go and post on it and stuff.
We don't nurture it as much as we used to do.
They're so old.
But I know of so many groups that they set up groups and then it's like nobody ever just goes on and starts a topic or starts a thing. Snobs is probably another one as well. You've got that kind of people who want to ask questions.
Our community loves this.
But the only other place I see it is maybe the board game trading and chat thing. But that's because that's got a group that's got about 15,000 people in it. So obviously, you're obviously going to get kind of like conversation starters. But that I'll say, I mean, Dan could start up a thing on like flipping you know, bridge spotting or whatever. You know, you could start one off on kind of like, you know, wedding cake designs and stuff. And I guarantee within 3 months, you would have a group formed with like 400 people in it that would be debating
I will give you
about whether you
two
should
examples.
Use like, you should use like kind of different kind of carrots in a different cake, or cake, should you do a gluten-free cake and should you just leave it for the top tier, or should
never
it
gluten-free
be a separate,
you know? I will give you two never, examples.
Don't give in to those fascists.
Quickly, on, two examples quickly. Dan recommended the Kraft Man to me on YouTube. Oh, yeah. During one, I say to me, because when he does his podcast, I feel like he's speaking to me. That has
Swing
been
in your ears.
A household staple and has changed my life. The second thing he talked about one time about bad art in charity shops. We don't have charity shops in America. We have Goodwills. And so that sent me down this rabbit hole of finding and joining Facebook groups of bad art in charity shops, for which one day my wife, who doesn't have Facebook, borrowed my phone to look something up and then questioned me, why are you in this group about artwork that is being founded in British Goodwills? And I said to her, there's this British man who likes board games, who designed a game that our children plays, and he told me to join this group. And her response was, are you in a cult? And I told her yes, because that was a better response than trying to explain that I listen to some guy in Huddersfield who comes out every 3 months with a podcast where he podcasts with a failed English teacher in America's about something. And that was a better response than just going, yeah, this is what's going on. So yeah, Dan can build a community. If somebody would just put Dan to work doing something important, the community he could build, I think it's because he has a very fatherly figure. I think that's probably what it is. I picture Dan as being a very New Balance wearing, get off my lawn type. And I think that is very attractive to.
I mean, they don't have New Balance in England. All right, so
do they not have
New Balance? I don't know what New Balance is.
Gabby.
Look, yeah, I need to go.
Yeah, yeah. Let's wrap this up.
We don't need him.
You can kick me off either way.
No, we're not going to kick you off.
You can keep on talking with.
No, I've had to cut Jerry off because I've needed to cut Jerry off. So it's just, you know. So this has been.
Don't ever stop. Don't ever edit out his shouts in the background. They're the comedy gold.
I can't. This is going. You know what? I'm going to need a month to edit this one. So thank you, Daniel, Michael, and Richard for coming on our 300th episode.
Are they leaving?
We invited our very special pod friends that we like. Jerry, stop shouting. So, like, you know, it is, you know, it does seem kind of ridiculous. I mean, we do see your faces, but like, you're not, when you talk about people that you've never met, you've only become friends on Zoom. Like, you know, it's, are you really friends? I don't know. But Dan says no, but you have invited me to stay in your home, Dan.
Yeah, only because I know you won't come.
Right. And Richard, I would love to come to Scotland someday. It's never going to happen. Me traveling there to Aircon.
You can invite him as well.
It's never going to happen.
I only ever invite people who are scared of flying. That's my trick.
But we do appreciate her coming on the show. That's going to do it for this episode of the Board Game Snobs.
The defeat in his voice, ladies and gentlemen.
We may or may not.
Thank you very much for having us. I will echo what Mike said. This is a fantastic podcast. I'm a fan. And thank you very much for including us on your 300th and final episode.
It very well may be. Richard, thank you for coming on as well, dear sir.
No.
I could thank listen. I'm telling you, you haven't done it yet. You need to start your ASMR YouTube.
Thanks for having me on. Was it happy anniversary, I guess?
Yes.
And it is. You are an absolute, you're a couple of legends. And I'm just sad I didn't get to see Enrique. You know,
has
maybe
been
next time.
He's probably going to arrive here in a moment.
All right. Well, until next time, this has been Daniel, Richard. I'm Gobby. And
is this our 300th episode?
Bye-bye.
Okay, I'm going to go.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for tolerating this episode of the Board Game Snobs. Stay classy. Thank you.